There is so much confusion over what we should be eating as endurance athletes. And there are plenty of people feeding us misinformation or strict guidelines that many of us don't know what's what anymore. That's why I asked Yuri Carlson to come on the podcast. Yuri is a dietitian nutritionist who works with endurance athletes to help them know what the heck they should be eating. In this interview, Yuri shares what a balanced meal looks like, what we should be eating while we're on the bike, how to incorporate electrolytes, when we might want to get professional help, and much more.
My name is Yuri Carlson. I'm based in Breckenridge, Colorado. I'm a registered dietitian. I run a business called Inner Wild Nutrition, and I work with active people. So you don't have to be a quote-unquote athlete. You don't have to be competitive. You just have to be a person that wants to feel better being active on a regular basis and want to continue being active on a regular basis. I started this business because, I even started wanting to be a dietitian because I had so many questions about nutrition. And I was kind of like, hey, if this can benefit me and my friends that are always having these conversations and questioning ourselves and having these experiences out there as athletes, and I can make this into a career choice, then I see that as one of the greatest win-wins in terms of making a profession just as much my personal life as it is my professional life.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm at with this.
So you said you're a dietitian. Can you tell us what's the difference between like a dietitian and a nutritionist? And when we're looking to work with someone, like what like education or certification should we be looking for to make sure that we're actually picking someone who's trustworthy?
Absolutely. Yeah. So a dietitian has gone through a certain undergrad and potentially graduate program that's very specific in dietetics and standardized approaches and research and all that kind of stuff. Then we go through that program. We have to sit and pass an exam, and then we have to maintain credentials every 5 years, like continuing education credentials and all that kind of stuff. So it's a pretty consistent thing that happens even after the schooling that happens. And then for a nutritionist, really anyone can call themselves a nutritionist. Because I'm a dietitian, I'm automatically a nutritionist, but not all nutritionists are dietitians, because anyone that takes a nutrition class or some sort of online certification or anything like that can also be a nutritionist. That's not to say that there aren't great nutritionists out there. I want to make that clear, but it is very much up to the person, to the consumer, to be aware of that difference. And pick the dietitian or nutritionist that they want to work with, and be okay with asking questions about, hey, what is your background? What is your experience? What is your education? And how long have you been doing this? And I think there are some also red flags to pay attention to as well, is that, you know, if you see somebody like promoting one way or the highway, or promoting different like only products that are a part of like, you have to have this to be successful and that kind of stuff, then that's kind of a red flag for me. So it's just really, you know, with the difference, it's important for the consumers to ask questions and be aware of that difference, and then pick the right person for them that they feel like has the credentials, and don't be afraid to ask what those credentials are.
Okay, very good. Because I think it is confusing.
Yeah, it is.
There are a lot of people out there giving advice, and when does it make sense for somebody to come work with you? Why would they want to hire a nutritionist or a dietitian?
Oh, that's a great question. I think it makes sense when your lack of food knowledge is getting in the way of your day-to-day life in terms of like not allowing you to maximize your experiences and have fun doing these things that I'm guessing you do for fun, like being an athlete, riding your bike, running, whatever it is, you know? So if it's this thing that you're just uncertain about, if you're constantly questioning your food decisions, if it's getting in the way of your mental space and just your ability to go out on a ride with friends and enjoy yourself because you're bonking or you're, you know, feeling hungry all the time or you just don't feel right, then it's definitely something that is worth digging into. You know, I always think about it this way, in that we eat multiple times a day, every single day. And yes, that's a luxury. It's something to be grateful for. But it's also something that has a really big impact on our ability to show up as the human we want to be. It's not like we get to take a rest week from eating. It's not like we only eat once a day, like most of us only work out once a day. But we do this every single day, multiple times a day, 4 to 5 to 6 times a day. So to ignore that and to just expect that it's going to fall into place, or just think that, oh, like I should know how to do this. You don't have to know how to do this. No one teaches us how to do this.
Yeah.
So no shame there. But it can have a really big impact, not just in terms of our ability to do the things we want to do on our bike, but also everything else in terms of our ability to show up for work, for the people in our lives, to, be a partner, to be a parent, to be whatever it is that you are in the moment. It's all of those things.
What are the biggest differences in nutrition needs between a cyclist or any kind of endurance athlete and just your average person?
I would say, gosh, the biggest differences are that it's difficult as an athlete to kind of just expect that things are going to fall into place and do what you've always been doing. When you add the layer of wanting to perform and then recover and to be able to show up for the rest of your life with placing these high demands on your body, you have to get more intentional about when you're eating and what you're eating to support your activity, so that it supports your activity, but also so that it allows you to support the rest of your life outside of activity. So it just becomes a bit more nuanced, I would say. And, it's one of those things where so often I have people that come to me and it's a matter of like, how much better can I feel here because I'm an athlete on top of being a human, And that getting into that and those details, that's really where the magic happens, because you can have both, absolutely, but there's just more detail that comes into play.
Yeah, I like you posted multiple times on Instagram about, you shouldn't come home from a hard ride and be completely wrecked the rest of the day, or like come home from your long weekend ride and like not be able to do anything else the rest of the weekend. And that something I've only just now in the last couple of years been figuring out, and it's such a game changer. I used to just always assume that's just part of it. And it's, yeah, if you eat properly, it doesn't have to be a part of it.
Exactly. It doesn't have to be a part of it at all. You can, like I you can have both. It's often that cumulative impact of what you did for the last couple of days that's going to impact, yes, your Monday and your Tuesday when you get back to, quote unquote, like real life or the regularity of things. And you shouldn't be starving for the next couple of days. You shouldn't be like tunnel visioning to carbohydrates and out of control with your food intake. You shouldn't be wanting to take a nap in the middle of the afternoon because you're still recovering, that kind of stuff. That's a great indicator for me that, hey, something's off earlier in the, weekend or something like that.
What's the biggest, where should we be focusing if that is us? Is it more of like our on the bike nutrition or our eating, refueling after our workouts, or is some combination?
Yeah, it's definitely a combination. The way that I look at nutrition for most of, well, for all of our clients is really there's this overlap, right? For most of us, we are, whether we're professional athletes or not, but most of us, it's we have this life and then we've got performance nutrition. So our life nutrition impacts our performance nutrition just as much as our performance nutrition on the bike stuff impacts our life and our ability to show up for life. There's a lot of overlap here. Whether you're training for 8 to 10 hours a week or whether you're training for 16 plus hours a week, we've got to look at the combination of both. So it's really a matter of both. When I have somebody that's on a Monday or a Tuesday saying, oh my gosh, like I just am struggling to recover from my weekend. I have super low energy. I just can't stop eating. All that kind of stuff. I look at, okay, what did we miss over the weekend when you were on the bike for a long period of time? Was it on the bike fueling? Were you not getting enough calories per hour? How was your hydration? But then how did you recover? What did you have for recovery within 60 minutes after? What did you have for your recovery meal to set you up for potentially the next day and all that kind of stuff? So it's both really.
What are the biggest mistakes you see female cyclists making?
Overall, blanket statement. I used to say 9 out of 10, but now I say 10 out of 10. Female cyclists and really just athletes in general are not eating enough. And I will follow that up with not eating enough, but also not eating the right foods at the right times. So it's a matter of like, okay, when do I focus on the carbohydrates that I really need so that I can give my body the carbs that it needs now so that it's not craving carbs later on at 8 o'clock at night, and I'm feeling like out of control because I want to eat everything, or I'm waking up in the middle of the night starving, or things like that. So it's a matter of getting enough, but also getting the right foods that you need at the right times. And those are the two biggest mistakes that I see.
So how do we do that? How do we time our eating throughout the day?
That's a great question. So typically, what I have for my athletes is that we don't want to go more than about, depends on the person, of course, but more than I would say on average, like 3.5 to 4.5 hours without eating either a balanced meal or a balanced snack. Now, of course, your schedule and when you're going to be training and all that kind of stuff comes into play. But typically, as an athlete with high calorie needs, if you go longer than that period of time, you build yourself up into so much of a deficit that then it overflows into negatively impacting your workout, not giving you what you need, or it overflows into, holy cow, I'm starving. I just sat down and ate way more than I wanted to because I went too long without eating. So this is where all these details come into play of like, all right, let's make sure that I'm not going longer than about 3.5 to 4.5 hours without eating. But then it's a matter of like, okay, what should I be eating? What does a snack look like if I'm going to be eating it 20 minutes before a workout versus if I'm going to be eating it and then going back to sit at my desk and work?
That makes sense. How do we know if we're not eating enough? I think it's like obvious when we're on the bike and we bonk or whatever, right? But how do we in our daily life know if we're not getting enough calories?
First off, cravings are a really, really big indicator for that. That can be really helpful. Our bodies, like, it's really, really difficult to kind of trick our bodies to say, okay, I'm gonna give you what you need, but actually not give it what you need. That's, the standard, just calorie restrictive diet that just eventually our body is going to get what it needs, whether you go off the diet and you eat more, way more than you want to, or you have these days where it's like, I can't do this anymore, or I can't do this anymore and perform as I would like to. So we can really, it's the message that I always want to send people is like, let's get past trying to trick our bodies to do these things and perform at these levels that we know are not sustainable based on the restrictions that we're placing on it. Now, the way that you know if you're not getting enough calories throughout the day is, yes, cravings, because your body is sending those signals. Oftentimes, it can also be like if I have somebody that comes to me and they're like, I'm just not hungry for the first half of the day. My question is, how long have you been doing that? Do you, what is your diet history? What is your restrictive history? Things like that. Our body has a really good way of just kind of being like, okay, I guess this is how it is. I'm going to stop sending out those hunger signals because I haven't been getting what I need for the last few years. So it's kind of pointless for me to be hungry in the morning. And I'm just going to try to push through it because I'm trying to survive here. Now, what happens when people start eating enough, those hunger signals come back. And our body says, oh my God, this is amazing. I can trust this again. I can ask for food and I'm going to get it. That's a really beautiful thing. And that's when you start to notice some really big improvements in your performance and your recovery and your energy. But I would say, like, bullet points to go back to your original question is that if you're not eating enough, if you've got cravings, especially in the latter part of the day, the second half of the day, if you eat way more than you want to, when you do sit down to eat, that means there's been some sort of cumulative buildup and not getting enough. And then low energy is a big thing. Persistent energy injuries for female athletes specifically is a big thing. And especially those nagging injuries, like the just little stress fractures or the things that just don't seem to go away or that you don't seem to heal from. And if you just are always dealing with one thing after another, that's a really big indicator that you may not be eating enough.
What would you say to women who are resistant to eating more? Like they're afraid I'm going to eat more and I'm going to gain weight.
Yeah. That's okay. That's how we've been programmed to think. We've been programmed to think if I eat more, I'm going to weigh more. But here's the thing. I want to reframe this and think about it this way. If you eat more, if you eat what your body needs, if you give your body what it needs, your metabolism goes from this low baseline of just barely burning enough to sustain because it doesn't have enough to actually burning food as fuel and energy instead of storing the bare minimum that it's getting as fat. So it's this switch that happens in your metabolism when you start eating enough that is really, really, really valuable. And that's when the cravings shut off. That's when your body starts burning food as fuel and energy and all that kind of stuff. So if you're worried about starting to eat more, like it's the standard thing. Like, I know I need to eat more, but I'm scared to eat more because I feel like that's just going to make me gain weight. If you're in that place, ask for help. That's really the best piece of advice I can give you, because you need to get clarity on when to eat more and what to eat. It's not just about eating more carbohydrates all the time. It's not just about eating more calories all the time. It's about, what am I eating that's going to give my body what it needs when it needs it, so it can optimize my metabolism to support energy, to support performance, to support recovery. And that's where things fall into place, where you can eat more, but not have it just be this thing that just makes you gain more weight. And it's really about building up more trust with your body to say, hey, I'm going to give you what you need when you need it, rather than be on this kind of wave of not giving you what you need and then going overboard because I'm in this massive deficit and I can't retain my willpower anymore. And that kind of cycle that happens, that's when we get into trouble. So we want to get you out of that cycle and say, hey, I'm going to give my body what it needs. And to do that, you have to ask for help, because you have to have the knowledge on how to do that. It's not super complicated, but we spend a lot of time in our heads just questioning our food decisions, and it's just a tough place to be. So you've got to get clarity on it. So it's okay to ask for help, I would say.
I just wanted to jump in here real quick and let you know that we have new Femme Cyclist t-shirts. If you want to show off the Femme Cyclist love, head over to our shop and grab one. You can find them at shop.femcyclist.com.
You said something that I really liked. You said, and I probably won't say it exactly correctly, but basically that your healthiest body might not be your ideal body. Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's really valuable to have conversations about whenever I'm working with a client, a lot more than nutrition. You know, nutrition is never just about the food. It's about, where does this ideal body come from? Where does that image come from? What are your experiences in life that have led you to that? Mm-hmm. What have you been influenced by? And what really matters? You know, does it matter? Does your body composition really, really matter? Does your performance really, really matter? Does the number on the scale really, really matter? And why? And digging into all of these layers is really, really valuable to help any one individual figure out where these expectations are coming from. Do we need to reframe these expectations? And oftentimes we're just stuck in our head about it for a long time on our own. So it's really cool to see that it's not this big, massive boulder that has to be overcome a lot of times. It's really just a matter of having the conversations around it and figuring out, you know what? I'm going to set my goals on how my body feels, how my body recovers, my ability to go out with my friends and ride my bike and have a really good time and also enjoy really good food and support my relationship with food. And then often when we get into that kind of stuff, people stop caring about the number on the scale or the body composition because they feel so good doing what brings them the most amount of joy, which is awesome.
That
really,
is awesome.
Really amazing to see. Yeah.
What's your position on like tracking calories or macros? What do you have your clients do?
Yeah. So to start out with, for the first 5 days before we actually get on our initial call with a client, we do have them track their calories, but I call it like a food and a feels and an activity log. I send them a Google document and I say, track your approximate serving sizes, track when you ate, you know, like if you ate breakfast at 10 a.m. versus 7 a.m., I want to know that. Approximate serving sizes, also track, like, what did you do that day? Did you sit at your desk all day? Did you go out for a lunchtime ride? And how did you feel? Did you get to the end of the day and you were starving and you ate way more than you wanted to? Or did you feel awesome energy throughout the day and you got on your bike and you had a really good ride and you were able to eat whatever it is? Like, we want to know that big picture instead of just the calories and the serving sizes and the macros. Because the way that I look at all of this is that component, tracking calories and all that kind of stuff, that is one piece of the puzzle, but it is absolutely not the only piece of the puzzle. Because no matter how your numbers add up at the end of the day, if you still feel hungry, we've got to pay attention to that. If you feel like you're eating way too much, we've also got to pay attention to that. So it's one piece of the puzzle. It's a tool that can be used. It is in no way the only tool or the only metric that should be used. We should also be paying attention to arguably the more important things, which is your hunger, your satiety, your performance, how you feel around food, and all of that kind of stuff as well.
Is that something we should be like journaling about on a regular basis?
I think it's a great idea. You know, I have so many people that do the food log that we send them, the template, where it's literally just, I'll give you the rundown of it because it would be a cool thing for anyone to do.
Yeah.
But it's literally just, you know, write down like for 5 days, what you ate and when you ate, approximate serving sizes. You don't have to weigh and measure anything because that is enough to drive somebody crazy and it's not sustainable. So approximate serving sizes, when you ate, and what you did that day and how you felt. And that information allows people to kind of go back and look and really see like a big picture overview of like, it might allow people just even on their own to figure out some things and to fill in some holes. So yeah, it's kind of like a food journal, food log, but also the feels and the performance and all of that kind of stuff. And it's not to say that, you know, you have to do it 7 days a week, every single day, every single month, all that kind of stuff, but it can be a really great check-in. And when we have our clients start out with this, they come back to us and they're like, wow, I've never done it this way. This is a really cool way for me to see sort of the big picture. Like, I really love tracking how I felt and how my digestion was or how my sleep was. Like, I had no idea that there was a correlation here. And then it's all on paper and they see it and they're like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So it's really cool.
I just did another podcast interview and we talked about journaling about your menstrual cycle and like how you feel with your workouts throughout your menstrual cycle. And I think this is another one. We're just so generally out of touch with our bodies and like not even really paying attention. So I think it makes a lot of difference just to pay attention for a little while.
Absolutely. Right. You think you're like, okay, day to day, I have a good sense of what's going on, but it's so hard with all the other things that we are being exposed to really keep track of the bigger picture of it. And it would be awesome to add to this food log, you know, the food and the feels and the activity, just add a section about your cycle and track that as well.
Yeah.
Or track it with the app that you use to track your cycle and all that. And I'm sure you would notice some really interesting things.
Yeah, I think so. What should we be eating at our meals? You said eat every 3 to 4 hours, right? What should we be eating every 3 to 4 hours? How do we make, and you've talked about balanced meals. What is a balanced meal look like?
Great question. So a balanced meal in general is, I have this formula that I like to go by. It's called the meal building guidelines. Balanced meal, I always think about it as, what's my protein? You know, that's a great question to ask. And I like to think about how I'm building my grocery list and stocking my kitchen in this way too, is like, I always want to make sure that I have some proteins available. It can be fish, it can be tofu, it can be beans and rice, it can be whatever proteins you like. Like, start out by just writing out a list of your go-to proteins, your go-to protein sources. So then you don't have to think about it. Just make sure that your kitchen is always stocked with some of those. Bonza pasta is another one. Super easy, just, you know, kitchen shelf stable protein source that you can throw together in a matter of 8 to 9 minutes and have ready to go as a source of protein and fiber, and then throw some veggies on it. But I digress there. I'll start with a protein. And then what I want to add is some sort of plants, fruits or vegetables, doesn't matter. And then I want to look and ask, is there some sort of complex carbohydrate? And then the final component is healthy fats. Healthy fats are easy to forget, but they are just as important as anything else. Fats contribute to satiety. They're really, really important for brain health. And they help to absorb our fat-soluble vitamins. Most popular is vitamin D. You know, you need fat in your meal to absorb vitamin D, which is really important. So I'm always looking at, okay, what's my protein? What are my plants? What are my complex carbs? And what's my healthy fat? And if I've got all those components in a meal, then I'm good to go. So for example, like if I'm making a dinner, like last night I made salmon. I pulled salmon out of the freezer in the morning, defrosted it. Okay, I've got my protein. I'm going to have some sort of plant. I actually had made sweet potatoes with that. The plant was the sweet potato, and I had some broccoli as well. And the sweet potato acts as a complex carbohydrate also, because it's one of those starchy vegetables. So that checked off the complex carbohydrate box as well. And we also had some like polenta that we just sauteed in some avocado oil, and that with like a dill sauce. The dill sauce is yogurt and mayo and some Bragg's aminos and delicious.
You should come cook for me. This sounds delicious. Yeah.
And you know, it's like simple, throw it together. Like, it's really just, you don't have to be following a recipe. The way that I like to simplify this is like, if I got the components, I'm going to pick my protein, and then I'm just going to figure out, okay, what plants do I have in my fridge or my freezer that sound good with this protein? And then I'm going to go from there. Typically, the healthy fats fall into place pretty well with a sauce or with some sort of oil that you're cooking them in. And the carbohydrates are pretty easy to figure out as well, because carbohydrates are typically the more shelf stable option, whether it's rice or potatoes or pasta or something like that. But that's what we're looking for in a balanced meal, is we're looking for some sort of protein, some sort of plants, some sort of complex carbohydrate, and then some sort of healthy fat.
I love that. For switching to on the bike nutrition, what do you recommend? Are you recommending like Cliff Blocks, or are you recommending real food? What should we be eating?
It depends on the person. I'm recommending what sounds good to you and what works for you, first of all. So it can be something like some gummies, some Cliff Blocks, might be something like, we have a client right now that who just got so excited about candy corn. And we looked at the nutrition fact label for candy corn, and we were like, hey, this is carbohydrate.
Yeah.
You know, you could have some sort of fancy sports nutrition packaged gummy, or you could have candy corn. But this goes to really the core of this, is like, what are you going to be excited to eat when you're on the bike? Because that should be what you're bringing with you. If you're like pulling out another package of gummies and you're like, oh, I have to eat this again, then it's probably likely that you're not going to meet your calorie needs for that hour. So why don't you bring a baked good or a cookie or some candy corn that you're like, yes, I get to eat that in an hour. I'm so excited. Because then you're going to not bonk. You're going to feel better on your ride, and you're going to be excited about what you eat. The thing with exercise is that when we are exercising, our body transitions from sort of that rest and digest to that fight or flight mode, right? In that fight or flight mode, our appetite is suppressed. So we've got to do the best we can to support that, be aware of that, and figure out, okay, with this additional layer of it being complicated to eat because I'm on a bike, to my appetite being suppressed, what can I choose that I'm going to be pretty psyched about eating? And that's what you should be eating when you're on the bike.
What suggestions do you have for someone who doesn't really like sugary food? Like, I really struggle with that. I'm not a big sweet fan on the bike. What kind of like savory carbs could we be eating that are still easily digestible?
Absolutely. One of my favorite go-tos is like a savory scone, like a cheddar chive scone or something like that, you know? And scones are one of the most simple baked goods to make, because it's literally, you know, you take flour, you put it in a food processor with some butter, you add a cup of cream, a tablespoon of sugar, some leavening, and you call it good. And then you mix in the mixing. So you could grate some cheddar cheese in there with some chives. You could put it like whatever you, green chilies and cheddar cheese or anything like that. And then you can freeze them. So whenever I'm thinking about ride food, I'm thinking about like, what can I freeze well that I'm going to be able to pull out, you know, in even a couple of weeks when I'm like, oh shoot, I need something for my ride. So that's a great option, is something savory like that. Sometimes Hawaiian rolls, those really, you know, those Hawaiian rolls that you get in the store, and that's in, they're super, super soft. So, and they have a high moisture content. So they're a lot easier to eat than something like, you know, one of the dry prepackaged bars, which has a low moisture content, which isn't sometimes super appetizing. So with that, you could take like a combination of, sometimes if you want something a little bit sweet, but not too sweet, I'll do like a semi-hard cheese with a little bit of marmalade or jam or something like that, or even cream cheese and a little bit of jelly. So you get a little bit of sweet and a little bit of savory. That's a good combo. Savory baked goods are a great place to start for that. Peanut butter pretzels are good. They're a little bit crunchy sometimes, like a little bit too crunchy. Or you could do some sort of combo of, you know, like pretzels with some salty nuts or something like that. And, you know, some sort of dried fruit, but something that's not too much added sugar.
I'm so glad I asked that question. Those are some great suggestions.
Awesome. Good.
Electrolytes. What should we be taking electrolytes before we ride, during our rides? What's the proper timing of our electrolytes?
So electrolytes, the general guideline that I like to set here is that anytime you're sweating, you should be drinking electrolytes instead of just water. And the reason for this is because anytime you're sweating, you're losing electrolytes in your sweat. You're losing namely sodium, but other smaller amounts of other electrolytes, potassium, magnesium, all that kind of stuff. You want to replace that instead of consuming water and just watering down the electrolytes that you're already losing, because then that's just not going to be super effective. So drink electrolytes anytime you're sweating. You can also drink electrolytes if you're behind on your hydration for any reason. If you have a headache, if you've been traveling, if you're sick, if you're hungover, anything like that is a great opportunity to add electrolytes just to your day, 1 to 2 servings of electrolytes. So this happens a lot for traveling. You know, like you're traveling on an airplane all day. There's no way you're going to drink the same amount of water that you would drink if you were sitting at your desk all day.
Yeah.
I'm going to add a serving of electrolytes to my bottle that I drink on the airplane throughout travel. Number one, it helps me retain my water a little bit better, and it makes it so that I don't have to take multiple bathroom breaks while on the airplane. But also it just helps to kind of maintain your baseline with less overall fluid. So those are two things, like day-to-day hydration and then with electrolytes, and then performance hydration with electrolytes.
Is there any brand that you recommend, or are they all kind of created equal?
That's a great question. So I personally really love Scratch Labs because they're super simple ingredients. Their flavor is really mild, and because they have just pure, simple sugar in them. The sugar that's in Scratch, it's 80 calories per serving. A great way to get some calories in that's super easy to fuel your efforts. But also what happens with the sugar in something like Scratch or a Noon Endurance, for example, that also has sugar, whereas the regular Noon has stevia in it, the Noon tablets. The reason those products have sugar in them is because sugar acts as this thing that increases our ability to hydrate when we are exercising. So sugar, there's only so many channels across your small intestine for sugar, different types of sugar, for water molecules, all these kind of things. Sugar acts as this bus, where it's this little bus of sugar molecules going across your small intestine, but it also has space on that bus for extra water molecules. So if that sugar wasn't there and that channel wasn't being used with a stevia-based product, for example, you would not be able to optimize your hydration and get extra water molecules across that channel on the bus that water is on. Does that make sense?
It does, yes.
Yeah. So it's a way to optimize your hydration and just, you know, get more hydrated if you have a little bit of sugar in those sugar-containing electrolyte products. Now, outside of that, if you're being really mindful of your sugar consumption outside of efforts, you could do a different electrolyte product that doesn't have added sugar in it when you're, you know, on an airplane or something like that.
Yeah.
But honestly, as an athlete, our carbohydrate consumption is just a little bit higher anyway, and that's okay. If we wanted to be picky about it, or if we needed to be, this is a very individual thing, but we could look at something like the, what is it called? Element, you know, Liquid IV has a little bit, but not too much, or not a ton, about half the amount of Scratch. Scratch Wellness is another product that is to help people get back up to baseline if they're behind on their hydration. So that's a great option. There's a lot of options out there. And they're not all created equal. So definitely a good thing to dig into.
Okay. What about, anything about Osmo? Is that one that you recommend?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Yep. That's a great one. Yeah. Osmo, what's it called? Tailwind. Those are all great ones.
Okay.
Just be mindful and look at the labels and see, does this have a little bit of sugar in it to help me with my hydration when I'm exercising? The ones with the least amount of sugar in them, those can be great options for when you are not exercising, but you need electrolytes. But also go by taste. Drink the one that you're going to be drinking on a regular basis and that you're going to want. And there's a lot of variability in terms of the sodium content of products. Like Element has 1,000 milligrams of sodium, which is quite a bit. Some people will drink that and they'll be like, this is disgusting, this tastes like ocean water. Other people will drink it and they're like, oh my god, this is so good. That's a great indicator that that person that loves that kind of stuff, they're probably a higher level sweater. They lose more sodium in their sweat and they actually need that. Whereas the person that doesn't really like that and they think it tastes like ocean water, they lose less sodium in their sweat, and that's okay. So with electrolyte consumption, it's a really good thing to just go by taste, not go by what you see somebody else recommending or doing, because again, our body has a really good way of telling us what we need or don't need. And it's important to listen to that. So that's a great place to start. If you crave that, there's probably a reason you crave it.
One topic that's been coming up a lot lately is aging. How do your recommendations, or maybe they don't, I don't know, but do they change for women who are peri and postmenopausal?
Yes, absolutely. So peri and postmenopausal women, one of the big things to consider is that their carbohydrate need can decrease and their protein need can increase. Mm. So I'll give you a really specific example here is that when that age woman gets done with, let's give a baseline. When a, 30-year-old woman or anywhere from like that premenopausal stage, when a woman gets done with a workout, an endurance workout, say a 3-hour effort, I would be recommending let's aim for 4 parts carbohydrate and 1 part protein. That would be a perfect example of this is 40 grams of carbs and 10 grams of protein. That would be something like a recovery shake, like the scratch makes a recovery shake, a powder, or it could be even like a chocolate milk, or it could be a smoothie with a banana in it and some regular milk or an unsweetened plant-based milk and something super simple. It's going to give you about that amount. Now, if I'm talking to a perimenopausal woman, I would be saying, let's aim for about 30 grams of carbohydrates and more like 20 to 25 grams of protein. Mm. So carbohydrates can decrease, protein can go up a little bit because their sensitivity to carbohydrate has increased and their need for protein has also increased. So we want to make those adjustments where protein just becomes a more prevalent part of a perimenopausal woman's diet. We have to be more intentional about it, but also we have to be intentional about getting them the carbohydrates they need when they need it to support performance, not just saying this blanket statement, oh, you should be eating less carbs, eat less carbs all the time, any time of day, whether you're on the bike or not, because that doesn't really work. That's what often leads to those frustrating outcomes of, I'm perimenopausal and I feel like my energy sucks. I am losing my performance on the bike. I'm not able to perform as I want to because I'm trying to eat less carbs and it's just not working because it's not very intentional, you know?
For women who aren't ready to work one-on-one with a nutritionist or they just want to go get more generalized information, do you have any experts or books or podcasts that you might want to recommend?
Yeah. So I think I would say overall with, experts, books, and podcasts is to come at that and think about that as like, this is a starting point for me. You know, if I'm listening to a podcast, if I'm reading a book, this is a starting point baseline where all that kind of stuff is kind of aiming for a group of people. Mm-hmm. They're not talking to any one individual. Mm-hmm. So don't feel like if you hear information in a book or a podcast, like that has to apply to mm-hmm. me or I'm doing it wrong. Mm-hmm. You can use it as a starting point, but then feel free to experiment from there because you may be above or below that baseline. There is a really great podcast called Inside Sports Nutrition that gives some really good in-depth conversations about various topics in sports nutrition. And the hosts there are really wonderful and they kind of dig into all the like multiple angles of all of that content. So that's a great place to start if you kind of want to dig into more of just the nuances of performance nutrition and hear people talk about and have conversations around the nuances of this very broad topic that is sports nutrition, and that it's just a lot of the information out there doesn't apply to any one individual. So just always know that.
Yeah, I like that. So we hear a lot of like generalized guidelines and recommendations, and that should be maybe a starting point, but it's up to us to either on our own, like journal and kind of pay attention, like, is this working for me or not? Yes. Or if we want even like better help to reach out and hire somebody to help us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I share a lot of information on my Instagram page too, where I'm trying to help educate people mm-hmm. so they can make more informed decisions for themselves rather than say, this is the way that you should do it. And, you know, don't go off of this plan because that's just really never the case.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. What have I not asked you that you think is important for women listening to know?
I don't think you haven't asked it, but I think the main thing that I want women, active women to know is that they should feel really good mm-hmm. and strong and happy and healthy and confident in their performance, in their nutrition, and while doing these things that they love to do. So often I have women that come to me and they're just struggling through all of their rides. They're constantly stressed about their race weekend or a group ride because they feel like I'm just winging it. I'm going to see what happens. This might be a good ride. This might be a bad ride. I might be able to hang. I might be the last one, and I might be stressed about holding everyone back. If your lack of nutrition knowledge is getting in the way of your enjoyment of doing the thing that brings us so much joy, you should be asking for more. And it's okay to ask for more. Yeah. Because you can feel so much better. And I just want women especially to know that, because I've been there before and I was just in this place where I had no clue what the hell I was doing. And sometimes I would have a great effort and sometimes I wouldn't. And it's really hard to do that.
Like, yeah.
This stuff brings us joy.
Yeah.
And we have the opportunity to elevate that joy.
I have three final questions for you, but before I ask those, where can women come connect with you? Where can they learn more? And what kind of services and products and offerings do you have?
The best place to find me is on Instagram. That's where I'm the most active. So my Instagram page, Yuri_Carlson, is a great place to start. Shoot me a message. Tell me that you heard about me on this podcast. If you have any questions, I'm always down to send you a voice memo answer back. I love connecting with people there. There's an application in my bio to apply for a discovery call for my program, Fuel Your Potential. The Fuel Your Potential program is the only program that I offer. It's a really in-depth 12-week program. And it's the only program I offer because I know it gets people results. I used to offer a la carte services and that kind of stuff, but I could never change someone's life in a matter of 1 to 2 60-minute sessions. So I honestly just stopped offering that because I want to work with people that I know I can help. And I also want to work with people who are ready to change their life and they want to do this indefinitely. So if you look at my Instagram page in the client wins highlight, that's all Fuel Your Potential clients. You can kind of get an idea of what that program looks like, what's included. And yeah, please just don't hesitate to reach out to me on Instagram and send me a DM.
And definitely, yeah, definitely go follow Yuri's Instagram because it's one of my favorite Instagram accounts. I just feel like you're like so no nonsense and down to earth and very, very trustworthy. So
thank you.
Yes. Three final questions. The first one is, what bike or bikes do you ride?
I ride Giuliana bikes. So right now I have the Maverick and I love it. It's their bigger travel 29er. I have their Rubion coming. I'm really, really excited about that. That's their bigger travel. It's actually going to be the mullet. So it's going to be the combo of the 27.5 and 29er. And that's just going to be like my fun bike, which I'm really excited to have. And then I have the Quincy, which is their gravel bike. So that's kind of like my in-between season when, you know, the trails and Breck aren't quite good to go yet, but we can get out on the bike path before it's been cleared or we can go ride gravel. That's my go-to. And then I have a fat bike. It's like, you know, random, you know, secondhand fat bike specialized that I ride in the winter, just to get on the bike if I can.
Yep. Second question is, where is your favorite place you've ever ridden your bike?
Oh gosh. I just did a girls trip to Vancouver Island at the end of August with two of my best friends. And we rode in Vancouver Island in Cumberland and Nanaimo. And it's beautiful. It's amazing. You know, it's coastal riding and it's just a really special place to ride. So I definitely want to go back there. That's on the top of the list right now.
Final question is, what is your favorite thing about riding your bike?
Gosh, I still find myself, you know, I've been riding for 10 years plus, and I still find myself just riding my bike and just being like, this is the best, with a big smile on my face. And there's nothing else that gives me that amount of consistent joy still than riding my bike. It's the best. It's just so fun.
If you enjoyed that episode, can you do me a favor and help spread the word about the Femme Cyclist podcast? You can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, rate us on Spotify, or share this episode with your friends in an Instagram story. However you choose to share the love, tag us or DM us a screenshot to us on Instagram, and we'll randomly pick some of you to say thanks by sending a Femme Cyclist t-shirt. Thanks for listening, and until next time, happy riding.